Hello and welcome to NewsWrap. Today is Wednesday, 6 November, and I'm Patrick Kidd. In today's NewsWrap headlines, Donald Trump has won the 2024 US presidential election. Our partners at Bloomberg reports on his victory. With Donald Trump taking office in January, Sasfin Wealth's chief investment strategist David Shapiro unpacks why Trump is so popular to voters in the US. And mining maven Peter Major discusses what a second Trump presidency could mean for the sector. New Tshwane Mayor Dr. Nasipi Moyo details her action plan to get the struggling metro back on its feet. Otis CEO Wayne Duvenage updates us on what his organization is doing to hold Eskom accountable after the electricity supplier proposed a 66% price hike over the next 3 years. And Ultron has been South Africa's top-performing stock over the last year. So business editor Alec Hogg sat down with CEO Badler Kapp to find out why Ultron has been so successful. But kicking off our show, certainly the biggest news story of the day, Donald Trump has been elected as President of the United States of America, claiming victory over Democratic candidate Kamala Harris. Our partners at Bloomberg report.
It's official. Donald Trump has been elected President of the United States. Multiple networks are calling this. He has taken over 270 in the Electoral College. That is the breaking news headline. Donald Trump is the President of the United States of America 2024.
Yeah, we were expecting this, just to give you a sense, just to repeat the comments that he had last night when he did, or this morning, early yes. This morning, at his headquarters in West Palm Beach, Florida. I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. We are going to help our country heal. We have yet to hear from Kamala Harris, Danny, and that, I think, is one key question as we go forward.
When BizNews editor Alec Hogg spoke to David Shapiro on the BizNews Briefing podcast this morning, the U.S. presidential race was not yet over, but Shapiro did share his insights on why Donald Trump is such a popular candidate to U.S. voters.
Why do they like Trump so much?
I don't know. I can't understand it, you know, because he has a man whose financial affairs are an absolute shambles. You know, his accountant is in jail, or if not in jail, has been sentenced to jail, serving there. You know, he's a man who's been convicted of not rape, but abuse to women. There's so many things against him, and yet that doesn't count. And, you know, even from a religious point of view, and I don't want to bring religion in, but you would think that very religious people would follow maybe what the Old or New Testament say about, you know, particularly the Ten Commandments. He's abused every one of them, and it doesn't matter. They changed the conversation, you know, accordingly. Oh, well, as long as he's a good governor, it doesn't matter that he's a bad man. He's good for the country, you know. So you always find that you can manipulate the story. But I think markets are, you know, they see the rand. I saw in your introduction slide, you know, 76. It's around about 1770 at the moment. And that's as you say, that's dollar strength. Worries about inflation. You know, worries that Trump's policies are going to be inflationary. And that's why you watch the 10-year treasury. Bonds are going up. Alec, when you look at that, and I must mention it, the 10-year there is now almost 4.5. I think it's just below that. A few months ago, that was 3.6 when Powell started to reduce interest rates. You know, we were now on this trajectory downwards with rates coming down. So that swung around. I mean, for bondholders, that's been chaotic. But the equity market on the other side is just roaring.
Also speaking on this morning's BizNews Briefing, mining expert Peter Major unpacked what a second Trump presidency could mean for the mining sector, both locally and globally.
You were a little bit cautious about Trump winning because of the volatility that it would bring to the world. And as a consequence, the ability of your sector, mining, to make long-term decisions. If you've got a volatile fellow back in the White House. Do you still feel the same way?
Everything's unpredictable with Trump. Whereas with Harris and the Democrats, they always think you can reason, you can make a deal, you can kind of plot forward. You don't know what's going to happen from the next hour. And that will keep the volatility up, and that's actually good for a lot of fund managers. Certainly good for me because it gives you opportunities, but it's hard to make long-term plans for sure. It's much harder for people in the country and outside to kind of plan things when you don't know if it's a solid base you're on and you don't know if it could change quickly.
What might be going through Neil Froneman's mind right now? We're going to talk more about Sibanye. They brought a trading update, share price up 10% on the JSE yesterday. Neil really has to be pretty focused on what goes on in the United States because he's got so much of Sibanye is now there. What do you think's going on in his head?
Neil's juggling a lot of balls, and it's hard to say where his focus should be. He's pretty experienced. He's got a pretty good team. Those were a decent set of results, production results and financials that came out for the third quarter. I think they did surprise everybody, me included. But at the end of the day, he's got to look at his operations and look at the environment they're in. He's heavy into precious metals, but mainly platinum group metals. And they came down off a real high, and they're sitting at an okay price, which is their 20-year average in real terms, their 10-year average in real terms. So they're sitting right at the mean. And I hate things sitting at the mean because you don't know which way they're going to go, Alec. So Neil's got to say, gee, do I put more money into the PGMs and gold? Geez, it's so high now. It's too late to start putting money into gold. He's done well getting money from the States and from the European Union. And anytime a mining company can get money from the government, I think they deserve all they can get. They pay hell of a lot of taxes. They support a lot of jobs, a lot of industry. And yet mining always seems to be at the back of the queue when government is handing out billions of rands of grants to friends and businesses who'll never make it. Or in the States, they hand out billions and tens of billions of dollars for industries in trouble that they decided are imperative. So now we're seeing mining actually getting on the list and getting some money. And it's still tiny, tiny money. It's parking meter change compared to what governments are giving out before. But Neil's been able to get that. And that's a bit of a coup. And that is good. And I hope they get more because mining does so much for all the countries that it's in. And all it gets is bad news, shakedown artists, you owe us, you owe us.
We often talk about South African gold, and people of our age can remember when this country was the number one gold producer in the world, but it's just fallen all the way down the scale and is not quite irrelevant, but is a long, long way from where it was. How much juice is still in that lemon squeeze?
Very little, Alec. And we are almost irrelevant. We are less than 3% of world gold production now. You know, 3%. And we still can arguably claim we've got half the world's known gold. And what made us great was we focused on it and we knew it was the word raison d'etat. You know, it was what made South Africa.
A new Tshwane mayor, Dr. Nasipi Moyo, sat down with business journalist Chris Steyn to discuss her plan to get the struggling capital back on its feet. Action SA's Moyo took over in Tshwane after the ousting of DA mayor Celia Brink.
Well, you've inherited a Tshwane with debt that stands at almost 11 billion, with almost 7 billion owed to Eskom. How do you intend collecting that outstanding debt? And what progress is being made to bring financial stability to Tshwane?
Firstly, on the issue of the debt. So the debt we're talking about, the 11 billion, it's to the normal creditors. It excludes the one that we owe to the workers. So it's a little more than that. So with Eskom, because what we have decided was we're not going to do this alone. We are a sphere. There are other spheres that are involved in this. And there's a lot of people that are depending on the metro to be successful. This country depends on this capital to work as well. So what we've done was to approach the Minister of Electricity and Energy, Dr. Ramakgopa, and said, is there a way we can talk? we have a court date at the end of the month. It doesn't look good that us as the Metro will be with the power utility at court in front of a judge as if we can't talk to each other. So that was one of the first things I did after the election. So Dr. Ramakgopa then said to us, prepare payment plan. So we've been working on that the past 2-3 weeks. That's what we've been focusing on. Our first prize, Chris, is that we must get out of court. We must freeze the interest on arrears. So basically, we've paid over 700 million only on interest on arrears the past 12 months. And yeah, while we have been able to pay every month in terms of the what is owed on the current account, but we are not able to pay within 30 days. So we are saying to the minister, all of these are facts, and we're not going to pretend that this is not a crisis. However, it must stop. How do we stop it between the city of Tshwane and between the power utility? So we also applied for the debt, that debt program of Eskom. Ourselves and Ekurhuleni were rejected. Obviously, we are metros. We are not supposed to be there in the first place. So we were rejected. So we're not even getting assistance from that side. So what we have done now is that we agreed, let's work on getting out of the court process, but let's convince each other. So on, the days are a bit messed up, but we had a meeting with the Gauteng Eskom a few days ago, where then they said their piece, what they're unhappy about. And let me say this as well. So last year, there was an arrangement between Tshwane Eskom and NERSA was mediating between the two to find solutions. It led up to a payment plan being drafted. And then the power utility changed their minds and said, we're going to court. And I asked them that day, why did you change your mind? It looks like they were not convinced about what we were saying in terms of the conditions, and they were going the hard line. So that's what has been happening in the background. But what we are saying to the minister, if you get us out of court, you freeze the interest on arrears, and then we have a payment plan for the debt itself, which we can all agree on, then we'll be able, what we can commit on as this leadership is to be able to pay the current account going forward. But then that's the proposal on the table. Then the question would be, how can you guarantee that we'll be able to sustain the payment? There's a lot of work that is happening on the revenue collection side, including extra efforts to diversify our rates and taxes pool, like who actually pays, including us responding to the crisis that residents will tell you, you guys want to pay, but you're not billing us on what we've consumed. You estimate.
Wayne Duvenage from the organization Undoing Tax Abuse discussed the historical mismanagement of Eskom and the state-owned power supplier's proposed 66% price hike. Duvenage spoke to Business editor Alec Hogg.
Wayne Duvenage has dealt with a lot of appalling things in his time. He is the chief executive of Outer and a school friend of mine. Let's full disclosure, Wayne, we're both from Newcastle High many, many years ago. And you've been shaking up South Africa ever since you started or helped to start Outer, the organization opposing tax abuse. You guys had a big day yesterday with two focus areas, and I'd love you to take us through both of them, starting off with the Eskom, or the proposed Eskom hike of 66% over the next 3 years, remembering that it's just got a hike of 3 times the inflation rate for the current year.
If you go back to about 2007, 2008, when it all really started getting out of hand, is with the Medupi and the Kusile tenders that had gone out, and they were going ahead with these constructions, and we could see that they were losing control, and we were making submissions to NERSA to say, your role as the regulator is to start putting pressure on Eskom to get its costs in orders, because you know those power stations were budgeted at around 70 billion rand each, and they, I think they've run 3 times that. Headcounts grew by 50% from 32,000 to just under 50,000 staff. Yet there were no additional electrons being put into the grid over that time. This is a classic case of poor management, poor leadership, poor understanding of the complexities of running, you know, massive organizations like this, putting people into positions of power or leadership that were unfit to run those organizations for far too long, taking the eye off the ball of maintenance, and the system comes down. And now we, the taxpayer, and remember, government doesn't bail anyone out. We do, just under their instructions, have got to just live with this. And we're going to live with it for a long time. And I don't know how we're going to correct the Eskom situation, because these, I think Eskom in the long run, if you look forward a decade, 2 decades from now, as it mothballs its old assets, coal-fired power stations, it really is just going to be buying energy from the private sector. Something it resisted for so long, but now has no choice, because green energy and other efficient energy suppliers are going to provide this electricity far cheaper than Eskom ever could.
And closing off today's show, SA's top performing stock over the last year is Altron. Altron is up 107.8% year to date, narrowly beating out WeBuyCars, who are up 97.5%. Alekhog sat down with Altron CEO Van Lerka and asked him why the company is performing as well as it is.
Well, we've got a new feature on BizNews, which tracks South African shares. And due to a member of our community asking us, we have year-to-date performance. And top of the pops, well, there's been a two-horse race for the past few weeks between WeBuyCars and Altron. WeBuyCars is up 97.5% for the year-to-date, but Altron, after interims came out recently, is now 107.8%, so it leads the list. CEO Werner Kapp is with us. That's impressive, Werner. 107.8% year-to-date. The market loves you. The results that came out were also very pleasing. That bumped the share up a little bit further. But is this just telling us that it's taken a while for people to appreciate your appeal as a stock to invest in?
Alec, firstly, thank you very much for having me. Also, by the way, I'm great to be in such company, because WeBuyCars is actually a key business partner of ours. So it's nice to be in a competitive environment with them. Alec, I do think so. I think, you know, when I arrived at Altron about 2 years ago, what I found was a business that I felt was underappreciated. I felt that we had great solutions that really solve real world problems for our customers and for the country. A blue chip customer list, you know, sort of great people. And at the time, I said, folks, I feel that we're the best kept secret in the market. You know, why didn't I know all of that before I worked for Altron? So I think a part of it is telling that story better to our customers. Obviously, we've been executing in a fairly disciplined manner, I'd like to think, over the last 18 months on this strategy to be the leading platform and IT services company. I'm delighted that the market is rewarding that performance.
And that'll wrap up today's show. A big thank you to the talented BizNews production team for putting these clips together. And remember that you can find the full interviews on BizNews TV, radio, and .com. This has been NewsWrap, and I'm Patrick Kidd.